Chapter 10. Freedom. This incident occurred during the last year of my imprisonment. My recollection of those last months is as vivid as that of the first years, but I have given a sufficiently detailed account of my experiences. In spite of my impatience to be free, this year was the least trying of all those I spent there. I had many friends and acquaintances among the convicts, who had, by this time, come to regard me with favour. Many of them, indeed, held me in sincere and genuine affection. The soldier appointed to escort my friend and myself, we were released simultaneously, out of the prison, very nearly cried when the time came to part. And when at last we were in full possession of our freedom, and were staying in rooms placed at our disposal in the government building for the month we had yet to spend in town, this man came to see us almost every day. On the other hand, there were some men whose hatred I could never soften, whose regard I could never win. God knows why, but they showed the same hard aversion for me at the last as at the first. Some insuperable obstacle stood between us. I had more privileges during my last year. I found some old acquaintances, and even some old schoolfellows among the officers of the garrison, and the renewal of intercourse with them helped me. Thanks to them I got permission to keep some money, to write to my family, and even to have a certain number of books. For some years I had not had a single volume, and no words can describe the strange, deep emotion and excitement caused by the first book that I read in jail. I began to devour it at night when the doors were locked, and read till break of day. It was a copy of some review, and it seemed to me like a messenger from the other world. As I read, my old life seemed to rise up before me in sharp outline, as it were of some independent being, some other soul than mine. I tried to get some clear idea of my relation to current events and things. My arrears of knowledge and experience were too great to be made up. The free world had lived through many stirring events during my absence, but my chief anxiety was thoroughly to understand what was going on now, that I could at last know something about it. All the words I read were as tangible things, which I desired rather to feel sensibly than to use as mere media of knowledge. I tried to see more in the text than could be found there. I imagined it to contain mysterious meanings, and tried to see on every page allusions to the past with which my mind was familiar, whether they were there or not. As I turned each leaf, I sought for traces of what had moved men deeply before the days of my bondage, and I was extremely depressed when I realized that a new state of things had arisen, a new kind of human existence which was alien to my knowledge and my sentiments. I felt like a straggler, left behind and lost in the onward march of mankind. Yes, there were indeed arrears, if that word is not too weak. For the truth is that another generation had come into being. I knew it not, and it knew not me. At the foot of one article I saw the name of an old friend. With what avidity I scanned it! But the other names were nearly all new to me. New workers had come upon the scene, and I was eager to learn something of themselves and their achievements. It made me feel almost desperate to have so few books, and to know how hard it would be to get more. At an earlier date, in the old governor's time, it was a very dangerous thing to bring books into the jail. If one was found during one of his regular general searches, there was trouble, and no efforts were spared to find out how they had been smuggled in, and who was privy to the offence. I did not wish to be subjected to a humiliating scrutiny, and if I had, it would have been useless. I was obliged to live without books, and spent years shut up within myself, tormented with many a question and problem upon which I had no means of throwing light. But I could never tell the whole dreadful story. It was in winter that I arrived at the prison. and it was on the anniversary of that winter's day that I was to be released. Oh, with what impatience I looked forward to that thrice-blessed winter! How gladly I watched the summer fade, the leaves turn yellow on the trees, and the grass dry out over the wide steppe! Summer is gone at last. The winds of autumn howl and groan. The first snow falls in whirling flakes. The winter, so long, long prayed for, is come. Come at last. Oh, how the heart beats with the thought that freedom is really, at last, close at hand. Yet, strange to say, as the time, of the times, the day of days grew near, so did my soul become more tranquil. I was annoyed at myself, and even reproached myself with being cold, indifferent. Many of the convicts whom I met in the courtyard when the day's work was done used to stop and talk with me to wish me joy. "Ah, Alexander Petrovich, you'll soon be free now, and you'll be leaving us poor devils behind." "Well, Martinov, have you long to wait?" I asked the man who spoke. "Aye! Oh, good Lord! I've 7 years of it yet to weary through." The poor fellow sighed with a far-away, wandering look, as if gazing into those intolerable days to come. Yes, many of my companions congratulated me in a way that showed they really meant what they said. I saw, too, that they were more ready to address me as man to man. They drew nearer to me as I was about to leave them. The halo of freedom began to surround me, and because of that they esteemed me the more. It was in this spirit that they bade me farewell. Kaczynski, a young Polish noble, a sweet and amiable person, was very fond at about this time of walking in the courtyard with me. The stifling nights in barracks did him much harm, so he tried to preserve his health by taking all the exercise and fresh air he could. "I am looking forward impatiently to the day of your release," he said with a smile one day, "for when you go, I shall realize that I have just one more year to do." I need hardly say, though say it I must, that the prospect of freedom was for us prisoners something more than the reality. That was because our fancy constantly dwelt upon it. Prisoners always exaggerate when they think of freedom and see a free man. We certainly did. The poorest servant of one of the officers seemed to us like a king. Compared with ourselves, he was our ideal of the free man. He had no irons on his limbs, his head was not shaven, he could go where and when he liked with no soldiers to watch and escort him. The day before my release, as night fell, I went for the last time all through and all round the prison. How many thousand times had I made the circuit of those palisades during those 10 years? There, at the rear of the barracks, I had walked to and fro during the whole of that first year, a solitary, despairing man. I remember how I used to reckon up the days I had still to pass there. Thousands. Thousands. God, how long ago it seemed. Here the corner where the poor wounded eagle pined away. Petrov used often to join me there. It seemed now as if he would never leave me. He would walk along at my side without speaking a word, as though he knew all my thoughts as well as myself, and there was always a strange, inexplicable, wondering look on the man's face. How many a secret farewell I took of the black, squared beams in our barrack room! Alas, how much joyless youth, how much fruitless strength was lost and buried in those walls! Youth and strength of which the world might surely have made some use. I cannot help expressing my conviction that amongst that hapless throng there were perhaps the strongest and, in some respects, the most gifted of our people. There was all that strength of body and of mind, lost, hopelessly lost. Whose fault is that? Yes, Whose fault is that? Early next day, before the men were mustered for work, I went through every barrack to bid them a last farewell. Many a vigorous, horny hand was held out to me with right goodwill. Some grasped and shook my hand as though all their hearts were in the act. They were the more generous souls. Most of the poor fellows seemed to consider me as already changed by my impending good fortune, and indeed, they could scarcely have felt otherwise. They knew that I had friends in the town, that I was leaving at once to mix with gentlemen, at whose tables I should sit as their equal. Of this the poor fellows were acutely conscious, and although they did their best as they took my hand, that hand could never be the hand of an equal. No, I too was a gentleman from now. Some turned their back on me, and made no reply to my parting words. I think, moreover, that I saw unfriendly looks on certain faces. The drum beat. The convicts went to work, and I was left to myself. Suchilov had risen before anyone else that morning, and now set himself tremblingly to the task of preparing me a final cup of tea. Poor Suchilov! How he cried when I gave him my clothes, my shirts, my trouser straps, and some money. "'Tain't that! Tain't that!" he said, and bit his trembling lips. "'It's that I'm going to use you, Alexander Petrovitch. What shall I do without you?' Then there was Akim Akimitch. Him also I bade farewell. "'Your turn will come soon, I hope,' said I. "'Ah, no. I shall remain here long, long, very long yet,' he just managed to say as he pressed my hand. I threw myself on his neck. We kissed. 10 minutes after the convicts had departed, my companion and I left the jail forever. We went to the blacksmith's shop, where our irons were struck off. We had no armed escort, but were attended by a single NCO. Convicts struck off our irons in the engineer's workshop. I let them do it for my friend first, then went to the anvil myself. The smiths made me turn round, seized my leg and stretched it on the anvil. Then they went about their business methodically, as though they wanted to make a perfect job of it. "The rivet, man, turn the rivet first," I heard the master smith say. "There, so, so. Now, a stroke of the hammer." The irons fell. I lifted them up. Some strange impulse made me long to have them in my hands for the last time. I could not realize that only a moment before they had encircled my limbs. "Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye," said the convicts in their broken voices. But they seemed pleased as they said it. Yes, farewell. Liberty, new life, resurrection from the dead. Unspeakable moment. The End.